This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
Cole, you always love the national calendar days because every day is important and should be recognized. Take a wild guess what today is.
National High Five Day.
That is one of them. There's like nine. It's also...
I mean, at that point, I don't even know why you're doing it. If you have to share a day, I mean, it's not a national whatever day if you share it with four other things. It's not National High Five Day if it's also National Crab Cake Day and National Walk Barefoot Day and National Take the Trash Out Day, whatever it is. I mean, it's not the national of that day if it's nationally four other things.
Well, I kind of gave you a hint on one of the other nationally recognized days that it is, and that is Take a Wild Guess Day. Yes. Take a Wild Guess Day. National Take a Wild Guess Day. So if I will give
credit to whoever is pulling these ruses and coming up with like the calendar that people actually purchase that has these things on it that completely went and just made it up. And just throw that in there. That's good. We'll try that. National Day on your phone. Like National
Mow Your Grass Day.
Yeah, it's, I mean.
National Clean the Kitchen Day. Well, happy National Take a Wild Guess Day and also National High Five Day and the other seven things that are recognized on April the 15th. Also National Tax Day, but I think we did get another extension to May the 15th. At least I hope I read that right. Otherwise, I'm going to be late turning in my taxes.
Be careful.
It's not good.
Get that ready.
I know. All right. We got Major League Baseball to talk about. Unfortunately, not good for the Atlanta Braves. There's a bright spot. Ronald Acuña continues to tear it up. He's atop the major leagues in just about every statistical category. A tie for home runs up there in RBIs. Of course, average only behind your man Mercedes, who actually played for a while here in Birmingham. But he's tearing it up for the White Sox. The Braves lose in extra innings again. And I'm really starting to hate, Cole, this 10-inning format where the guy gets on and starts on second base, the minor league format that they adapted. I guess you don't like it when your team is losing these one-run games in extra innings, and the Braves did it again yesterday.
No, just obviously it's going to give teams a totally different advantage. Marlins took advantage of that last night. I had some folks sort of clapping back at me on Twitter last night, like, see, we told you Acuña needs to be leadoff. Which, I mean, all right. Is there a chance that he could have been up, not leading off the last inning? Maybe gotten a couple runners on, had a chance to do something else? I mean, I don't know. Maybe with, the six RBI that he had could have been 8 or 10 RBI last night with more people on. But I do have some interesting numbers for you as far as Ronald Acuña Jr. in the leadoff spot. Third career game with 10 total bases out of the leadoff spot. That's the most by a Braves player in franchise history ever. So, you know, he obviously has got it figured out. And
more than
a guy that
famed Otis Nixon? Wow.
It's interesting because I was going to ask you who you thought before Acuña who the best leadoff hitter in Braves history was. And,
it
boy, that's
Otis
the one we're
Nixon.
Going with.
Otis.
Who are you going with? Who are you going?
I mean,
Maybe Kenny Lofton for a minute, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Marquise Grissom.
So, I mean, he obviously had an amazing day yesterday. You know, 3 for 5, 2 home runs, a double, knocked in 4, scored 3 runs. He's got 13 extra base hits through 12 games. It's tied with Hank Aaron. I mean, that's most by a Braves player since 1900 through this many games. It's pretty impressive. So, I mean, he's arguably the best player in baseball. And I'm not going to back away just because he had a good game batting in the leadoff spot that you shouldn't be finding ways to give him more opportunities to do more damage. He's got 29 home runs of 430 feet, which is the most in Major League Baseball since his rookie season in 2018. Now, here's your problem. He had 10 total bases last night. That's twice as many the rest of the team had combined. The rest of the team,
so there's your problem.
Ronald Acuna, last night, goes 3-for-5, hits 2 home runs, also has a double, scored 3 runs. The rest of the team went 5-for-29, all singles.
There's your problem. Not getting any help. And Adam Duvall, who they let go, didn't retain him. And Braves fans loved him for just some of the clutch hitting that he did. He got the 1-year deal with the Miami Marlins, and he continues to make the Braves pay. But no, it's hard to argue with those leadoff numbers. When you think leadoff men, best leadoff man just comes to mind, Major League history. I always think Ricky Henderson for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, he was, because he was a little bit different, he was a guy that provided a lot more pop in that spot, but I mean, he could steal bases and would steal bases when he got on. Ichiro is a guy that probably comes to mind for me as somebody who, there's a lot of guys that the Yankees made moves on over the years, and that was kind of always the one that I thought that they would, that felt like a natural fit, and that I always wanted them to make, not to mention how good of an outfielder he was as well, but like, he was just a guy that was like not going to make contact. I mean, he was going to make contact, and with all the power that you were consistently bringing in, you feel like he would be sort of a natural. But I mean, he's a guy that I think of in that spot that was fantastic. Now, I can't, as far as the Braves go, I mean, after Otis Nixon, I don't really know. I mean, Tim Raines was pretty good there, and he gave you a little pop too.
Tim Raines was great in the leadoff. Pete Rose was going to be there. I think most of his career at bats came from the leadoff position. And then you're going back to like 1880, and I couldn't tell you some of these other guys who played in the leadoff. And
I'll just give you an idea how far ahead of everybody else. And listen, maybe if Ronald Acuna Jr. stays there, he can find a way to take over the spot. But I'll give you a little bit of how far ahead Ricky Henderson is in this spot. I don't think anyone's going to question greatest leadoff hitter ever. 98.3% of his career plate appearances, he hit leadoff. He had a 400 or better on base percentage in 16 different seasons.
Whoa.
He had 7 seasons with 100 or more walks. He led the league in stolen bases 12 times. He had 100 or more stolen bases 3 times. And he scored 100 runs 13 times. 293 career leadoff home runs, 96 more than the player who is in second place. Now, that might be something to watch for Ronald Acuna Jr. 296 career leadoff home runs for Ricky Henderson, most all time. So, yeah, I don't think that one's even really debatable. But I don't even remember Pete Rose batting leadoff, really. I mean, we didn't consume his games that way.
Right.
Didn't really know. I mean, Wade Boggs was the guy that led off a lot, but I don't really put him in there as somebody who could do all the other things that should come with a great leadoff hitter. Matt Carpenter's a pretty good leadoff guy. That's probably somebody that Pat would give us if he was here today. Vince Coleman is somebody. I think those Cardinals back in the day, I think they, with Coleman, McGee, Herr, those guys, I think they rotated it a little bit. But Carpenter's been pretty good out of the leadoff spot.
Yeah, you mentioned Ichiro. He's got to be in the top 10 for what he was able to do from the leadoff position as well. But no, I mean, Acuna right now he's zeroed in and how he's hitting the ball.
He's incredible.
That's stupid. We always think about quarterback being that position that we want to focus on, and it's important, but could wide receiver be the make or break position this year in the SEC? I just started compiling just when I thought about wide receiver you. If you just threw out to me, you said, hey, Landrum, what school in the SEC is best known for the wide receivers that they produced out of that program that have had, I would say somewhat successful careers in the NFL or are still actively playing? I would have told you LSU. I naturally would have just said LSU. Cole, what would your response have been?
I would have said probably LSU as well with Alabama. If you were going to go in the last, 5 to 10 years, it's probably Alabama. And I think historically you may still lean LSU just a little bit. All time, I may have even given you Florida. But, you know, Florida hasn't had as many guys that have just been off the charts good in the NFL. You know, they've probably had the best group of collegiate receivers all time. But Alabama has sort of moved into first place here in the last few years.
Yeah, and they have, and a big reason why is because you had a couple of first round draft picks, you know, a couple of years ago. You're going to have two more this year with Waddle and Devontae, but this is excluding those guys. LSU has 7 wide receivers active in the NFL right now. Alabama has 9. Florida has 9, and they're both going to be adding to that total. But it surprised me that Georgia comes in at number 10. You know, you still got A.J. Green, but you also got guys like Riley Ridley, Terry Godwin, Mecole Hardman, Lawrence Cager, Tyler Simmons. They're there at number 10. Following them, Ole Miss with 5, with Laquon Treadwell, Dante Moncrief, Adebojo, D.K. Metcalf, A.J. Brown. And then you get down to some of the other schools, a little bit surprising. All right, so Auburn with 2 wide receivers. One of those is Duke Williams. One of those, the other is Darius Slayton.
He's a Buffalo, right?
Duke Williams. He's a Buffalo.
Slayton's actually had a really good career in New York, much better than I think a lot of people would imagine, but then how was he utilized? So it's kind of tough to tell.
Sure. And Darius Slayton, a 5th-round draft pick. So those are the 2 active Auburn wide receivers. You're going to add that with Seth Williams, we presume, and also Anthony Swartz. But also Arkansas with 1, Missouri with 9. And that kind of surprised me a little bit just based on the offense when you think about it. But I guess you start thinking more about that offense, there hasn't been that prolific guy. We've seen prolific tight ends, like at Albert O, but we haven't seen like that guy there at Missouri.
No, you've seen a lot of good tight ends there. You know, I thought Jalen Knox was going to kind of be that guy. You know, he'll be back in a Missouri uniform this year. I thought he could be sort of a breakout wide receiver. You know, there hasn't been, I mean, there hasn't been a ton, but there have been a few. Like Dorial Green Beckham should have been a big time NFL wide receiver.
Yes.
He just couldn't keep everything together. LaDainian Washington was really successful in college. I remember Bud Sasser was really good for a while. But I think Dorial Green Beckham's the one that you look at and say, man, if he keeps it between the lines, like he absolutely should have been a big-time NFL wide receiver for a very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we look at, and we can start at Alabama and what that wide receiver position is going to look like, everybody points to John Metchie. You've got Slade Bolden. You have Xavier Williams. He's been there in the program for a while. Javon Baker is there as well. Who's going to be that guy? I think you would point to Metchie, and we've heard Saban talk about it, but as far as the elite talent that they've had at that position, whether it be Ruggs, Judy, Devontae Smith, or also Jalen Waddle, I don't know. It just seems like that there's that drop-off. Can John Metchie be that guy coming back for Alabama and one of those prolific wide receivers in 2021 across the SEC?
I don't think there's any doubt. I would have John Metchie as the top 5 receiver returning in the SEC. I'd probably have him number 3. If you're ranking wide receivers returning in the league this year, I think he can. I think he will be big time. I think he's going to be their first target. I think he'll have a lot of targets this year. And the offense is going to be different. I mean, let's keep that in mind that, I mean, you got a couple things to consider. You have a newer quarterback. You have a new offense. And then you don't have as many other proven guys around you at that position that can maybe take some coverage away from you. So things are going to change a little bit. But Metchie's a guy that I don't really care what the system is. I don't think it really matters what the scheme is, who else is around him. He's going to get his. If he's healthy, he's going to have a big season. I would have Treylon Burks ahead of him, and I would have Keyshawn Boutte ahead of him as well. I mean, kid's got more receiving yards in a single game than any receiver in SEC history. So those are just the guys that, whether it's physically, skill set, ability, ceiling, what they've already proven, that I would have ahead of him. But Metchie would definitely be in my top 5 SEC receivers returning, and it's just, I mean, that's one of the teams that you look at and you say, man, that position is going to be really different for them this year. Devonta Smith just had arguably the greatest receiving season in college football history. And we feel like we've been saying that a lot. Oh, by the way, I mean, whether we start with, you know, Cam, Manziel, Tebow, and then we can roll into what some of the running backs have done, what Derrick Henry did, then you roll into just offenses in general, this past year's Alabama offense, LSU's offense. Then you roll into what some of these receivers are doing. But, I mean, you look at six of the top 10 receivers in the SEC from last year gone. Elijah Moore, Devonta Smith, Kadarius Toney, Shai Smith, Seth Williams, Kenny Aboah, they're all gone. They're out. Those are guys that were returning. Now, that doesn't even include guys like Jamar Chase, who didn't play, Jaylen Waddle, who was obviously banged up, Trayvon Grimes, Osiris Mitchell, guys who were still very productive. I mean, Anthony Schwartz was productive. Josh Palmer at Tennessee was productive. All those players are moving on. And then I think you take that into account of, all right, so how many proven guys does that leave us with? Like, who do we look at and we say, oh, yeah, that's a legit big-time number one coming back, especially now that George Pickens is out of the conversation.
See,
it doesn't feel like a lot of the teams in the league have that guy that have had that guy for the last few seasons.
Cole, I was thinking about you, obviously, with your offensive lineman prowess. And I'm trying to think of the name of it, but it was the event where you had the cylinder.
Yeah, Powerball. It was Powerball.
Yes. You would absolutely have dominated.
Yeah. And that was one that the contestants would absolutely infuriate me because they would.
I know.
Their jukes were just terrible. Their patience to wait for some of the gladiators to go after the other contestant was just embarrassing. And then just the ability to be able to run through an arm tackle, the inability, was also atrocious. So that's absolutely one that I feel like I could have dominated, yes.
And you're, I mean, even as a gladiator, nobody would have gotten by you just based on your hands being inside. I mean, you're in pass pro there, right?
Probably, yeah. But I mean, you could also go Ronnie Lott in that mode and just, you got the opportunity to tee off on some folks. I mean, you could literally just play Chuck Cecil in that game and kind of wait and pick people off and try to de-cleat them, which would also be fun. But, yeah, that was one that I felt like I could have been very successful with. Absolutely. Especially now that I know, what was his name? Sunshine was 220 pounds. There's no way Malibu? He's getting me to the ground. Whatever. Yeah.
Twisted Steel and Sex Appeal? Malibu?
No.
He didn't sound like either one, actually, in that interview. But
big boo. No, he didn't. Boo. Just hanging on the beach, laying. What did he say? He had a cold one in one hand and a
poor guy.
Beautiful
can you
babe?
Imagine when he gets – he actually makes it, and they say, now you're going to be the – we are going to cast you as the California surfer gladiator because – we see so many of those surfers down there at the beach pumping iron every day. Yeah, that's going to be your that's going to be your character. He's probably
maybe that was
right.
What
come on
Sting's wrestling character was based off of the original Sting before he went dark.
I don't think so.
Right?
No.
Malibu from American Gladiator. Your tweets, we'll get to those in a moment. Pat's Archery and Outdoors is going to have you geared up for fishing season with the best variety of brands like Abu Garcia, Shimano, Luz, and more. Offering 12 months, same as cash financing. Pat's Archery and Outdoors, Highway 78 in Jasper. Cole, let's go to the Twitter feed. Got some interesting responses. People, what they thought about American Gladiator. Of course, we got the 30 for 30 coming up from ESPN.
Yeah, it's always brought to you by our friends at Royal Buick GMC. I'm in the Buick Enclave now. Love driving that thing every day. The kids, fantastic, comfortable. Your SUV headquarters right there at royalautomotive.net and where it meets 65 on 31 in Vestavia. Deuce May tweets in, favorite gladiator was Nitro. Favorite game was the one that you had to shoot the tennis ball at the target and the one when you had to truck the gladiator and dunk the ball in the barrel, the one we were just talking about. But, yeah, the tennis ball gun that the gladiator would shoot, I want that. I want that tennis ball gun. If I could mount that thing on my back deck and take out people who allow their dogs to poop on the sidewalk in my neighborhood, I'd be a really happy human being. Because all you folks that are listening that do that, if I ever do get a tennis ball gun, I'm going to shoot you with it. So you will get popped with a tennis ball if I could ever find a way to recreate one.
Somebody
sent me a link where they do have one.
Yeah.
I think on eBay where you can buy it. But I want the original one. I want the clip that went like up above your head, the clip of tennis balls. I don't need like to where you have to load it every time and then you can fire one out. Mike tweets, they need to bring back the video game for American Gladiators. That game was fun. It was too much Tecmo Bowl, NBA Jam, and RBI Baseball for me. I wasn't getting a little bit of Contra here and there. Chuck Graham tweets, can't wait to see Hunger Games Twitter go crazy off at Cole Cubitt calling it a ripoff. Well, it is. Ben Ledbetter tweets in, man, you know the gladiators were popping roids like M&Ms. It's That's part of why the 30 for 30 is going to be good, is to just...
So after that, they demanded the raise, they told, the executives came back and said, and this was when the roid phase was going through wrestling and Vince McMahon and all that was brought to light. So they told him, you're going to be drug tested now. But they gave him a six week heads up before they were going to start.
And they only needed like 6 days.
Maybe
that
220 was after the 6 weeks. Maybe that's why he was 220.
And there's a lot of folks that just know everything about this. So, like Glenn Opper tweets in, American Gladiators aired on Saturdays, FYI.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what?
And then AJ tweets in, there's an entire channel on Pluto TV that is nothing but American Gladiators. The tryouts to become a contestant were apparently very hard. They had to compete at multiple events to earn the right to be a contestant.
Like competing against each other, or were they competing against the training?
Yeah, I don't know.
Gladiators.
Brian Kelly tweets, also several of the gladiators ended up on WCW as pro wrestlers. Who?
Hopefully not Nitro, because she was a Nitro girl and had it going on.
Brian Kelly tweets at Cocubic, the pucks were designed so that first impact activated them, second impact exploded them. But if you're like dribbling the hockey puck, would you not? Is there a possibility you can mistakenly activate it?
Yeah. Yes. I got an update on Malibu. What happened to Malibu after the series?
Hold on a second. Marcus Johnson tweets, my favorite event was Divide and Conquer, which was practically Oklahoma drill, where the contestant had to break the plane to the goal line and then Greco wrestle Roman for the PAT. Yeah, that was actually, I don't recall very many contestants being successful at that. That didn't happen very often. Chris Gillum tweets in, my weekday viewing schedule for the 90s was American Gladiator, Baywatch, Hulk Hogan's old show Thunder in Paradise.
Thunder in Paradise. Forgot about that one. He had a cool boat.
Coaching Search is reporting this. And just think about what this may mean when we start talking about putting some of these super staffs together. Eddie George has been hired at Tennessee State. And Jeff Fisher apparently is his advisor. Now, I got some know-it-all on Twitter telling me that he can't be a part of the staff because he's apparently not an on-the-field coach. But... if I got a guy advising me and he's on the payroll, as far as I'm concerned, then you're a part of the staff. You don't have to be in the running backs coach to be a part of the staff. But when you're the multimedia director of SM_TN Sports and a member of TSWA, I guess, you know everything about, Tennessee State football. But Hugh Jackson is apparently going to be hired as the offensive coordinator. And there's a good chance that Rod Woodson will be hired as the defensive coordinator.
What?
At Tennessee State. So they're going to have an NFL Hall of Fame player, and they're going to have a former head coach advising them, and they're going to have a former head coach of two NFL franchises as their offensive coordinator and another NFL Hall of Famer as their head coach.
Would you say that he's Eddie George's one-up prime?
From a recognition standpoint, well, it's still Deion. And I mean, Deion's persona, I would still put them ahead of all of those.
Yeah.
But from a name recognition standpoint, top to bottom, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty impressive to be able to just say, all right, we're going to go out and get the biggest names we can and throw them in there.
I mean, who's next? Warwick Dunn? Is he going to join the staff?
Maybe. If they need a running back coach and he wants to do it.
Anquan Boldin? Bring him on.
But I sensed, and again, I don't know this, but I sensed in what Jay Walker told us yesterday, he's going to be on the call for the Magic City Classic, 79th Magic City Classic this weekend, ESPNU, Saturday night, 6:30. And when we talked to Connell Maynard just a little bit, head coach of Alabama A&M, we heard his comments as well. I do think that there's a little bit of, but you guys ain't never coached that comes into that. Now, Hugh Jackson, obviously, that doesn't apply to him. He's been the head coach of two NFL franchises. But for some of these guys that are just going out and getting a name, you may know a lot of football, but I mean, the demeanor that I saw in Coach Maynard was basically that we know what we're doing, man. And I know you got a bigger name, and I know you've done more, and you may be more popular, but there's a lot more that goes into this than just people knowing who I am. And so we're going to keep doing what we're doing, and that's where sort of the frustration comes from, is that, bring it. Like, do you know about recruiting? Do you know how to make in-game decisions? Have you ever had to make an in-game decision before? Do you know how to treat an injury? Do you know how to talk to a player who wants to transfer? I mean, just a couple of the things that come up. Guys that have academic issues, keeping guys eligible, making guys go to class, discipline issues, concerns. How do you handle players who do something dumb on social media? I mean, the list, let's go on and on and on and on. All those things you're just going to have to manage. And I think that, you know, Coach Maynard and those guys are probably sitting back saying, okay, good luck. Like, there's a lot more. It's going to be a tidal wave of problems you're going to have to deal with. And
well, it's guys that have cut their teeth. And that's why I asked him the question about resentment. He emphatically said, short answer, yep. And that was just talking to two active head coaches. You wonder if some of those coaches, well, like with the Prime, when you have the SWAC, if those guys kind of form like a private coalition and do everything they can, that the guys that aren't the well-knowns, the guys that have cut their teeth and they come up through the ranks and have coached at every single level just to try to get where they are right now, if they do everything in their power, you know what I'm saying, when it comes to recruiting.
And, absolutely.
All right,
yeah.
If he can't come here, I'm going to try to push him here, but I'm going to do my best to steer him away from there. That happens.
Sure.
Let's be honest. That happens. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Will that be the last former NFL player that we see at one of these historically black colleges and universities?
Oh, no. I think
coaching and
I'm not even
the head coach.
I'm not even going to say that'll be the last one in an HBCU school. I mean, I think you're going to get this at a lot of places. I think there are a lot of these flyers are going to be taken. We got a high school in South Alabama in Gulf Shores that just hired Brian Van Gorder as their defensive coordinator. And I mean,
and Phillip Rivers coaching in Fairhope.
That's actually at a different school. But I mean, you got a guy that's been the head coach at UNA and the head coach at Louisiana Lafayette that is now the head coach down there that also brings in former Notre Dame and SEC defense coordinator as his defensive coordinator. It's a high school. So, yeah, I mean, those guys have legitimate resumes, but I think whether it's, you know, being able to accumulate, Mark Huspeth being able to accumulate that kind of talent at an Alabama high school or some smaller school saying, you know what, we're just going to go with a big name that can draw attention and bring in some. I mean, worst thing that they're getting out of this is, I mean, Eddie George was on First Take yesterday. When was the last time First Take talked about Tennessee State? The worst
Never.
You're getting in this is, okay, the football stays bad, because if it wasn't bad, you wouldn't have made a change. The football stays bad, yet our school has been plastered everywhere for 2 or 3 years. Well, that's not a terrible trade-off for a lot of ADs.
No, it's not.
You know, Landon, the thing that sticks out about, okay, do you go past 3 wins? Do you find a way to improve upon that? You know, the schedule doesn't get any lighter. Rice, obviously, winnable game, but then they got the Texas Longhorns. Good news, you get them at home. Georgia Southern at home. And then A&M, that'll probably go back to being a neutral site game this year. Was not last year. And then they're at Georgia, and they're at Ole Miss, and they got Auburn, Arkansas Pine Bluff, which, by the way, remember, a lot of people are going to blow past that, but Jay Walker told us yesterday, that's an undefeated football team right now.
Yes.
Granted, they're playing in the spring season, but may not be a complete pushover. Then you got Mississippi State, and one of the most difficult Novembers in all of college football. At LSU, at Alabama, Missouri at home. So
yeah.
If you can find 5 or 6,
Cole,
let me know. I'm not sure I see it.
Yeah. But and that's what I hope that Hog fans are patient, because we saw how hard that team played. That team, they never gave up. They, I think, overperformed. Nobody expected the 3 SEC wins. They were close on a couple of others, but I hope people with the wins and losses don't see it as regression or Sam Pittman failing because of what he had inherited. I mean, we remember that defense. We talk about Ole Miss's defense. That defense, they got to get better. I mean, you had, I think, the second fewest sacks in the SEC behind Kentucky last year. So you've got to start getting some guys up front. And this goes back to the Chavis days, where, you know, he was brought in, and you know that Odom could get it done. He's proven it, but I don't know if he has the Jimmys and Joes. I think they've done a better job of recruiting in the last couple of years, but it's just going to take a while. And for a guy like Sam Pittman, I hope they understand that.
Well, and like I said, with Tara, you lose Jonathan Marshall, who was one of the most underrated players, probably not only in the SEC, but in all of college football last year. You know, lining up at nose guard, shooting gaps. You know, he provided a lot of pressure and a lot of disruption up front. And I don't get as consumed with the sack numbers, because, I mean, they didn't really go after people. You know, they played mostly three down. They were rushing three, dropping eight. We saw what it did to Matt Corral. Saw what it did to Mississippi State. Obviously, I think that's when Barry kind of figured out, okay, we can win doing this. Like, this is, we've got better guys at the second and third level that can help us be a team that is problematic that way. And I think, too, it sort of played into what they were going to have to be offensively. That they weren't necessarily just a run-heavy team, but I don't think they were a team that was going to be able to consistently stretch the field because they weren't going to be able to protect for that. Now, they got their opportunities, and they found their opportunities. But it's – I mean, the offensive line's got to get a lot better. And then K.J. Jefferson. I mean, I'm not 100% sold on K.J. Jefferson being their quarterback just yet. He was the number 17-ranked dual-threat quarterback coming out in 2019. You know, he's under 50% when he has played, 492 yards, three touchdowns and a pick. He has run for four touchdowns and a buck 25. So he's going to have to be consistent. Now, keep in mind, Kendall Browse is great at finding things that his quarterbacks are good at and continuously being able to help him deliver the football to what they're comfortable with. So if KJ Jefferson takes a step, I think they've got enough weapons at receiver, tight end, running back to be okay on that side of the ball. And it's not just Treylon Burks. I mean, Mike Woods had a heck of a year, too. So, and you mentioned it, a transfer receiver coming in that now could make them very difficult to defend on the perimeter, which may help open up some of the run game. A lot of the run game is going to have to go down to Jefferson. I think he's got to get, you know, 10, 12, 15 carries a game to keep defenses honest and be able to steal some yards. And if the defense plays the same way, takes the football away at the same clip, maybe they can be competitive. Maybe 5 or 6 is possible for Arkansas this fall.
Ronald Acuna, at the plate, the best thing I've seen. Here's the worst thing that I've seen.
Part of me wants to go with, I don't know if you've seen this floating around on Twitter yet, the awesome new end zone experience at Vanderbilt Stadium.
Tell me it's a pirate ship.
Mainly because I feel like they already had this, having walked that end zone plenty of times. I thought they already had seats and tables there for people to hang out, but I guess this one's different.
That'd be a... I mean, you think you get some nice food at the Grove. You go to Vandy. I mean, we're talking Chardonnay and caviar.
All right, but that's not the lobster. That's not worse than this. Have you guys tried Magnificent Meat or whatever? What is it? The fake
Impossible
beef?
Impossible or whatever?
Impossible beef?
No.
Not knowingly.
Appealing.
Not knowingly. There are a lot of people that swear by it and say that it's actually really good, that it's fantastic. I have not tried it. At Last Food Company is taking it to another terrifying level. They've raised $40 million. $40 million from a roster of investors, including Stray Dog Capital, the founders of Applegate and Stonyfield Organics, and Robert Downey Jr.'s Footprint Coalition Ventures, with the goal of mass producing its patented ingredient made from the roots of common mushrooms.
Mm.
Now, that's only part of the equation here. By sourcing the meat alternative from mycelium, the root structure of mushrooms, at last is able to mimic the texture of...
Such a shame.
Actual bacon.
Mm-mm.
Much better than it would from isolating soy or pea protein and combining it with oils like the leading plant-based burgers. The result is a patented ingredient. At Last co-founder Eben Bayer hopes to sell to major food companies looking for new kind of alternative meat products. At Last is also selling its own branded product line under the label My Bacon through direct sales. Very simply stated, these people about to start making bacon out of mushrooms.
Man, we already, the portobello on the grill, that was an alternative for a while, but I don't think we need this. We'll say that I had a fast one time where I fasted from dairy and also meat for 21 days, and I ended up going to one of the grocery stores that would carry this kind of stuff. And it was plant proteins that was breaded, like chicken nuggets. And you put them in the oven, and it wasn't bad. I don't know if that was a result of me just not having meat for, and I think I did it on like day 13. But it was actually pretty good. A little hot sauce, a little mustard. The texture was right. The seasoning was right. The breading was right. Wasn't too bad. But no.
Yeah, but this is bacon.
Yeah, man. You don't mess with
bacon. You don't mess with my bacon.
I mean, turkey bacon. I've been told just eat regular bacon. Don't eat turkey bacon.
I mean, turkey bacon's not even close. It's a fine alternative occasionally if you're looking to get your cholesterol down or whatever. But if you're wondering, bacon sales totaled $6.2 billion at U.S. grocery stores last year. That's a B.
You seen what they're charging for it?
Yeah, you thought toilet paper was hard to find last year. Bacon was getting close to that, too.
Good grief.
That's up 21% from 2019. Now, meatless bacon totaled just 37 million of that 6.2 billion last year. Now, Mr. Evans says it's a magic opportunity in life to have a product people love that has positive effects. You're wrong, good sir.
Yeah,
no magic involved in that.
Mm-mm.
You keep that potion to yourself. Don't want it. Keep that rabbit stuffed right down in the hat. Not in my neighborhood.
Don't want that magic mushroom.
Nope.
Mm-mm. Yep. I mean, what's next?
Twirl that wand somewhere else. Buddy.
Ugh.
So, yeah, mushroom bacon coming to a store soon, New Year.
No. Keep it out of Alabama. Kind of got this started with we're talking about Treylon Burks in the wide receiver position. We were talking with Tara there in Fayetteville about the Arkansas spring game and kind of projections for 2021. But then we started looking around the SEC and the wide receiver position. This might be the position we really need to look at just based on the talent, the quarterback rooms, and the plethora of talent we've had in the SEC across the board the past few seasons, Cole. But for Alabama, John Metchie, almost 1,000 yards, which is kind of crazy to think about with the 55 catches that he had. Treylon Burks, we mentioned Kayshon Boutte. George Pickens, though, that kind of changes things. And George Pickens, with the injury, you look at the production, it really pales in comparison to what we've seen. He's like that big play guy, but it doesn't seem like he's that guy that's going to get, 15 targets a game, 10 targets a game. Just based on his numbers and the way that he's been used in that offense, but I think part of that probably had to do with you didn't have anybody that could throw it to you.
No, and that's why I think this position may be that much more important this year. We know what college football is becoming. We know what it is, and we know what the offenses are and how they're built and how they're made and really what you need to be successful. So that being said, we could talk about who's got returning experience at receiver, who's getting transfers in, who has guys that are proven, but the more important question is who's delivering them the football. And there are not as many proven guys. I mean, this time last year, nobody was going nuts about Kyle Trask. Nobody was going nuts about Kellen Mond. Now, we debated should they be at the top of the list of best quarterbacks returning in the league. Mac Jones, some people were high on him. I wasn't as high on him. He proved me wrong. Had an incredible season. But, Connor Bazick might be a guy at Missouri. I think Will Rogers is going to get it figured out there at Mississippi State. Obviously, we know Matt Corral is going to be in the discussion for QB1 in college football. I mean, think about that. That's where just really, and this is not a knock on Matt, but there's not that definitive number one guy at quarterback right now that just everyone across the board is. There's not a Trevor Lawrence that everybody looks at and says he is QB1 returning this year in college football. And then I don't know if you have the veteran power that is moving on to other schools that we think, okay, well, he's been around it, he's done it, he's played, he should be able to pick it up and go right away. There's a lot to like about Ken Seals at Vanderbilt. I don't know if he has enough around him to be very good or to put up good numbers. Kentucky's been doing it a different way. Things are going to be different there. I think Bo Allen's the guy, and they got two transfer receivers in, Wandale Robinson and Trayvon Morgan, but is that going to work? I don't know. If it's going to work, they better have some receivers. Because they're not managing that offense the way that they have in the past. This is not going to be Kentucky ground and pound, big blue wall. Even with Christopher Rodriguez, who is one of the best backs returning in the league, they're going to open it up a little bit. Well, you need receivers to be able to do that. I mean, and you look at Kentucky and you say, all right, Morgan 6'6", 215, Wandale Robinson extremely productive. Maybe that's enough. Well, just from a depth perspective, Bryce Oliver, Akeem Hayes, and Allen Davis have all left Kentucky. So your numbers are down at the same time. And you might have a couple of guys back, but I think Josh Ali has a chance. They couldn't really get him the ball last year, but he's a guy that Eddie Grant and Coach Stoops would constantly tell us it's there. He can help us. He can be a guy that hurts people down the field. They just didn't give him the ball a whole lot. So maybe that's enough that they can find a way to go out and be productive in a bit of a new scheme. But, I mean, we've talked about this with Auburn. This needs to be the biggest concern for Auburn football going into this season. You don't have the guys back that you did a season ago, and it didn't even look like it was enough when you had those guys back. I mean, Seth Williams was really good at times. We know what Schwartz could do, but did he get the ball enough? Did they utilize his ability? Eli Stove, I mean, he still had 44 catches, 3 touchdowns. So now with those 3 guys gone, you don't have a receiver returning that has more than 7 catches in their career. You don't have a receiver returning that caught more than 1 touchdown last season. That's going to be a big problem for them. You know, South Carolina loses Shai Smith. Ole Miss loses Elijah Moore and Kenny Yeboah. I know he's a tight end, but he's a pass catcher. I mean, again, go to Florida. Look at the pass catchers that they're losing. I mean, Kadarius Toney, Kyle Pitts going to be gone. Trayvon Grimes going to be gone. I think this position could be as critical. And then let's say a team like LSU actually does extend. Let's say they go past expectations. Well, it's probably going to be because Dre Jenkins is pretty good. It's probably going to be because Keyshawn Boutte is having a really good season. You know, they're going to have other guys that can go out there and help them make plays and help that offense be good. So I just think that this position is critical. I mean, if Georgia's going to compete for a national title, they got to find a way to get past losing George Pickens, a guy who's probably in my top 5 if he's healthy and I know he's coming back. And then, I mean, how does he want to handle his situation? We don't know that. I'm not ruling out that he could come back for the last month of the season. Does he want to do that? I mean, he needs the film. He needs the games. There's no doubt about that. But would it really surprise you if he said he's going to get ready for the NFL? I mean, I wouldn't be ultimately surprised. So we don't know how that's going to look even. And Georgia's got a couple kids to play. I mean, Kyrus Jackson did some decent things. Jermaine Burton did some nice things. Are any of them super dynamic? No, they're not. But they could be serviceable enough with the tight ends, with the backs, with the offensive line and the quarterback to where they're still pretty competitive. And let's face it, if Georgia gets past Clemson, they ought to be undefeated in the SEC championship game. That's just what it is with that schedule.
3-Man Front. Weekdays 10 till 2 on Jocks 94.5, JocksFM.com, and the Jocks mobile app.